Hello, this is World Business Report from the BBC World Service, where we bring you the latest in money, marketing, manufacturing, and yes, much, much more. Please review us, rate us, share us wherever you can. BBC podcasts are supported by advertising.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI4People.
Sommer, Sonne, sowas von besonders. Jetzt die coolen Mercedes-Benz Sommerhits entdecken. Über 4000 attraktive Vorführ- und Geschäftswagen aus unserem Bestand. Von A-Klasse bis V-Klasse, von Cabriolet bis SUV. Alle kurzfristig verfügbar, alle zu Top-Konditionen, alle für Sie bereit. Sommer, Sonne, Sommerhits. Nur bei Ihrer Mercedes-Benz-Niederlassung vor Ort.
Hello and thank you for tuning in to World Business Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Leanna Byrne. And on the programme today, Volkswagen jolted the electric vehicle industry by partnering with an EV startup. We'll get the ins and outs of that deal. The Japanese yen has dropped to its lowest level in 34 years, which has people wondering, will the government intervene?
They would want to intervene because excessive weakening of the yen would cause a very big, strong inflationary fear amongst the Japanese.
And we'll get the latest on the olive oil industry straight from Madrid. But first up, let's start with a significant turnaround. Kenya's President William Ruto has decided not to go ahead with a controversial finance bill that triggered widespread protests across the country. Speaking directly to the nation on TV, President Ruto announced he won't sign the bill into law despite it being approved by MPs.
Having reflected on the continuing conversation around the content of the Finance Bill 2024, and listening keenly to the people of Kenya who have said loudly that they want nothing to do with this Finance Bill 2024, I concede, and therefore I will not sign the 2024 Finance Bill.
That was Kenya's President William Ruto speaking there. Now let's get the latest from our Nairobi business reporter, Jill Kiriungi. Hello, Jill.
Hello, Leanna.
Appreciate you taking the time to be here. We heard President Ruto just there. He says he won't sign the bill, but what exactly does that mean?
So what he has said is that he's going to withdraw the bill altogether, that they have come to an agreement with the lawmakers who had passed the bill to withdraw it. And he has now said that conversation would shift towards how does a country meet the necessary funds that it needs to run government. He said one of the ways that they are exploring is to have cuts. And he has said that there will be cuts in the executive. That's starting with the presidency. They'll remove things such as travel expenses, hospitality expenses. There will also be cuts to parliament, to county governments. So all with an aim of looking for the necessary funds to run government. He also said that they want to have conversation with the young people, as he had said earlier, as well as other stakeholders in the economy.
So essentially it's going back to parliament and it's going to come back in a different form. Would that be right?
Well, the kind of understanding that we have right now is that the move of the bill, that is a member of parliament who was responsible for introducing the bill, would notify the speaker that they would want to withdraw the bill entirely. And that means that it's basically done and dusted at this particular point in time.
I mean, there was huge anger yesterday. You know, we spoke to about this yesterday, very violent and deadly protests that claimed at least 22 lives. I mean, what's the mood like now, just after that announcement?
I think people are waiting and watching to see exactly how the president will implement what he said. Obviously, the mood has been one of very skepticism. They feel that a lot has been said, that they want, but they want to see corresponding action on the ground. We do know we have had reports of protesters who have been killed. So there's a lot of sadness around that. A lot of people have been injured and are nursing wounds in different hospitals. We did also see businesses being targeted yesterday by gangs who were masquerading as protesters. So there's a lot of tension still in the city, and people are waiting to see whether the military, which has been deployed to restore law and order, would still continue targeting civilians.
Yeah, it's really difficult because there are still concerns about government revenue and public spending. They need to find money. This, you know, putting a bill back to Parliament or, you know, renegotiating something else, it doesn't really fix the problem, does it? They still need to find that money for the debt.
Oh, yes, Liana. In fact, the president had said that they were hoping to raise about $2.7 billion from the taxes that would have been introduced from this bill. He also did mention that the country is still struggling to pay debt, with Kenya's public debt standing at 68% of the GDP, yet the IMF and the World Bank had recommended 55%. So he says that there's still a long way to go, and that for every 100 shillings that they collector's tax, 61 shillings goes to pay debt. So this just shows that the economy is still in a very precarious situation, and they'd really have to be very creative as to where they find these funds.
But when we hear from the youths in Kenya, you know, the young people there, they really don't want any taxes whatsoever. I mean, is that a possibility that they won't introduce taxes? Because, I mean, it seems like they really need to.
I think the reason why the youth have been very vocal this time around is because they feel that taxes have been introduced before. There was another finance bill last year that became law. However, there's nothing really to show. They feel there's nothing to show for the taxes that have been collected so far. They feel that there has been mismanagement of public funds by government officials. We've been seeing some members of parliament showcasing fancy vehicles and fancy watches on social media, and they feel that their money is being misused. They also feel that corruption is not being adequately addressed. Some of the people who have been implicated have not been charged yet. So I think the idea that they feel is that we should start, we should first start by managing what has been collected. We should start by using these funds properly before introducing a set of new taxes.
All right. Jill Kuriyungi, we really appreciate you and your time. Nairobi business reporter for us. Now, one of the proposed taxes in that finance bill that we're just talking a bit, little bit about there was that 15% tax on digital content creators and influencers' earnings. Tinashe Muniki is a makeup artist, content creator and creative director, and she gave her reaction to that news that the signing of the bill has been put on hold.
My initial reaction was kind of good because, you know, we are fighting as a country to have it rejected. So hopefully, as he said, it's going to go back to parliament. So we're going to we're praying for like a positive outcome out of this.
When you heard about this 15% tax on digital content creators' earnings, what was your reaction then?
We're in an environment where costs are being increased. So a depletion from your income basically gives like a bad feeling in your stomach. The content creator space, this whole tax basically applies to, you know, like content monetization, that is whatever you're sharing and creating and all of that. So I felt like it was a bit unfair, mostly because we're basically still on our baby feet, you know, in the content creator space. And most of us are freelancers and small businesses. So basically adding more tax to our income that is not yet, you know, self-sufficient or basically giving us a constant income, then it feels a bit discouraging and heartbreaking, you know. So that was my initial feeling about it, yeah.
So have you done the sums and realized how this new tax might impact your income and your ability to produce content?
Okay, when the tax has been implemented, right, it's going to mean that there'll be reduced net income. So this will significantly like have me either raise my rates, which is a bit difficult because, you know, right now brands don't necessarily have fixed budget for like us content creators. So getting equipment which that is already being taxed to is going to be so crazy. So I'll need to basically just like adjust my financial planning, and that's kind of going to be like a huge impact, you know, in just my money in general.
And there's already a high cost of living in Kenya, isn't it?
Yes.
Have you felt that yourself?
Yes, definitely have, because, you know, I'm as much as I'm still like living with my parents, there's still all of these things I need to, you know, be catered for. That is like equipment, there's still water and electricity, prices for like bread and milk still, you know, increasing, there's fuel as that. So it's basically touching on all those tiny spaces that are going to affect literally everyone in the country.
Now, in that finance bill, it's not just content creators who's going to have to deal with higher taxes. It's also other people as well. But do you feel like, you know, by targeting content creators, that's more unfair than other people?
Well, okay, I don't think it's unfair compared to other professions. It's just a bit new in the digital content creation space. So my one thing was just like, because we're just an emerging industry, right? We're a bit new, and placing a high tax burden on it, I feel like they should have allowed us to kind of grow, give a bit of time to, you know, to just get our footing, and then now slowly introduce taxation. Because as a content creator, we basically, we don't have a consistent income on things, right? It's very like up in the air when you're going to get a job or when you're going to get your next payment and all that.
I mean, now that Ruto said that, you know, he might not sign that bill, do you think that's enough to stop the protests?
Personally, I do not think so.
Okay.
Yeah, there's still a lot that needs to be corrected. There's still a lot that needs to be amended or rejected. So I don't think that's enough for how crazy Kenyans are feeling right now.
That was Tinashe Moniki, makeup artist, content creator and creative director. Let's talk electric vehicle news. Volkswagen is investing up to $5 billion in an American EV startup, Rivian, to boost its software capabilities and compete better against Tesla and Chinese carmakers. Roger Atkins is the founder of Electric Vehicles Outlook. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Good. I'm good. Well, first of all, Roger, I want you to let me know who Rivian is. I've actually never come across them before.
Okay. They're a fascinating company. They're an electric vehicle startup company. They have a similar kind of charismatic leader to Elon Musk in a gentleman called RJ Scaringe. And they've basically been going just a few years now. And as with everybody who gets started, you know, the early days are tricky. But they make very nice, large, and let's be honest, relatively expensive off-road electric vehicles.
Mm. And so how will this partnership work?
Well, basically, it's about, you know, like all good partnerships, something that someone's good at, sharing that with something else. So for Volkswagen, it gives them access to better software. And to be kind of blunt, Volkswagen aren't exactly in the front seat in terms of giving great software proposition on their electric vehicles, on their vehicles in general. They have a division called CARIAD, which has been specializing on putting that software proposition together, and it hasn't been doing a great job. It hasn't got a great industry reputation. Whereas an electric vehicle startup that vertically integrate all of that software capability, they call it full stack software. So it's everything that they're doing is within and under their own control. They're very good at that. So that's what Volkswagen are going to get. In return, Rivian are going to get, as you say, $5 million, and they're going to get access then to the global proposition that is one of the most long and well-established car brands in the world.
I mean, Rivian needed this investment, didn't it? Because it's hard to get startup funding these days with interest rates so high. It's not as much money floating about.
Yeah, well, they did what a lot of companies have done. They went to the market, they raised an awful lot of money, billions. But you can burn through that quite quickly. Once you build up a business at scale, once you've got a big factory, once you've got a lot of employees, you know, your payroll costs, your overhead costs every month are enormous. You know, they're tens or hundreds of millions. And therefore, you need to have a long runway, if you like. You need to have that money to go through to get to the point where you're selling more things and making revenue than you are spending money. Tesla have gone through this journey. They've had many, many years, you know, well over a dozen years of not making any money. And then they've, against all the odds, some might say, have progressed to the point now where they're doing very well. They make profit, they're at scale, they've got those economies of scale, but that isn't quite where Rivian is yet. So this is buying them some time. So it's, yeah, like all good partnerships, there's something in it for both of them. Of course there is.
Yeah. Quickly, Roger, I mean, why didn't they just buy Rivian outright?
That is a great question. And I've been asking myself that question, to be frank, because, well, and also, we're going to see a lot more of this. Mergers, acquisitions, investments, all of this is inevitable because the challenge for the electric vehicle is to make it a proposition for everybody. It's ironic that the name Volkswagen, that means people's car. But what we don't yet see enough of is electric vehicles that are the people's car. In other words, affordable for the masses. So anything that takes us towards being in that position in the industry is good. And the only way we're going to get there fast is by seeing some of these mergers and acquisitions between what you call incumbents, the people who have been doing it for a long time, and people like Rivian, the disruptors.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's really interesting, and I'm sure we'll see a lot more. And we'll speak to you again all about that. Roger Atkins, founder of Electric Vehicles Outlook, thank you so much for joining us. Now, we've also got Russ Mould, Investment Director at AJ Bell, with us today. And one of the things that happened on the market when we heard about this deal, Russ, is that Rivian stock went up, but Volkswagen stock went down. Now, I thought investors would look at this as a win-win. Clearly not. I'm glad I'm not putting money in the stock market myself.
No, I think with Rivian, yes, you can see the clear win. It's a fantastic cash injection for a company that has lost $16 billion in the last 3 years. And that might be why VW aren't itching to buy the whole company, particularly when analysts think it will lose $13 billion in the next 3 years. So that's one possible explanation for that. But VW shares, as you say, are down. Rivian's are up by a third. VW's are down slightly, maybe because analysts and the market is just thinking that's an awful lot of money for a company whose products ultimately still aren't terribly proven, even if their software is better than VW's.
Yeah, I mean, VW shares have more than halved over the past 3 years. Is that a direct result of these kind of EV startups or even Chinese EV makers coming into the market?
I think it's the competitive challenge from electric vehicles, the fact that Volkswagen is still heavily exposed to the internal combustion engine, but also they are pouring money into EVs and EV demand is proving slightly disappointing this year. We've actually got a Dutch EV infrastructure company called Alfen quoted on the Amsterdam Stock Exchange today. It's not very big, market valuation about €1 billion, but its shares have halved after a profit warning today saying electric vehicle demand isn't coming through as strongly as expected.
Now, 2 weeks ago, the European Commission brought in its plan to hit Chinese EV makers with tariffs that go up to 38% for some companies. Now, they are in talks about that, so it might change. But I wonder, has that had any benefit to European EV makers on the stock market?
Not particularly, and partly because the Europeans haven't implemented the rules yet, and partly because, as you said, there are now talks ongoing about possibly trying to avert those tariffs and that trade war. And also, the Chinese probably have seen this coming because they are looking to build factories in Hungary to try and get around the rules in the first place.
Interesting. Okay, Australia, its consumer price index came in stronger than expected at 4%. It was 3.6% in April. Is this a case of sticky inflation, Russ?
It is, and Canada showed something similar yesterday with an unexpected acceleration in its inflation rate. So inflation in Australia above the Reserve Bank of Australia's 2 to 3% target. Michelle Bullock, the governor there, has even been saying she's thinking about an interest rate increase if inflation stays sticky. Financial markets are looking for central banks to cut interest rates. The Bank of Canada squeezed one out in June, as has the European Central Bank, and the Swedes and the Swiss have managed too. But markets are looking for central banks to cut, not to keep rates unchanged or put them up. And that's one reason why markets have taken a little bit of fright generally today. But the Aussie dollar is a beneficiary. It's gone up again because maybe now you can get a better return on your Aussie dollars if you have some.
There you go. Top tip there. DoorDash, another company story, the US-based delivery company DoorDash. It's been holding talks with Deliveroo about a possible takeover. It's not going to happen, though, is it, Russ?
No deal there, I'm afraid to say. But interestingly, Deliveroo shares are up 3% on the London Stock Exchange today, albeit still two-thirds below where they floated in 2021 when interest was at their peak in these home delivery companies because everybody was trapped in their homes under lockdown. DoorDash has made acquisitions in the past. We've seen Just Eat Takeaway by Grubhub as well in America. So there is consolidation in an industry that is providing a great service, but still generally losing money. And intriguingly, Deliveroo's European competitors or peers, like Just Eat Takeaway in Holland or quoted in Amsterdam, or HelloFresh or Delivery Hero quoted in Frankfurt, their shares are down 5, 6, 7, 8% today, partly because the deal didn't get done, making people wonder whether these shares are actually not as cheap as they thought. Or also maybe if DoorDash did turn up, how would that change the competitive scenario for those companies?
Okay. Russ Mould, Investment Director at AJ Bell. Thank you so much for joining us. In more financial news, the Japanese yen has plunged to its lowest point in 34 years, and analysts are warning that the government could intervene as concerns over the currency continue to decline. I asked Sergio Takeshita, professor of School of Management at the University of Shizuoka, how the currency got to this point.
The biggest factor is the U.S. Many people talk about Japan, but the fact of the matter is that Bank of Japan does not have the maneuverability or the deep pocket people think. That's my opinion. In case of the United States, what you're getting is demand pull inflation, which is a lot more serious, which is stem from brisk economy. But in case of Japan, it's more of a cost push inflation, which is inflation that is caused by external prices. So obviously the former is a lot more serious, and therefore the Fed is likely to continuously tighten their policy. Mm-hmm. Bank of Japan, it's very difficult for them politically to raise the rates, particularly because our economy isn't really back on our feet yet. And also considering our debt position, which is very, very large to say the least. So politically, it's very difficult for Bank of Japan to basically pumping up the rates as ECB or in case of Fed.
But how does a weaker yen impact the average consumer in Japan?
It will gradually hit them, particularly through energy prices and imported prices. Of course, many people do think that, you know, partially they're correct to say that, you know, we're export-oriented countries, so it would benefit a lot of export industries. Obviously, there is a limit to the benefit of them we can feel. We are getting a lot of benefit, for example, like inbound tourism, which is now bigger than our semiconductor business. That is doing very well thanks to weakening the yen. We have a lot of tourists that's spending a lot of money, which is shifting our economy from excessively inclination to the manufacturing to a lot more to the service sector. So that's good. But, you know, there is a problem in the longer term basis, as you just noted, because it will eventually hit us, hit the consumers like a body blow.
Why exactly would the Japanese government intervene in a currency market? Why would they do that?
They would want to intervene because excessive weakening of the yen would cause a very big, strong inflationary fear amongst the Japanese. And also it would increase the prices of many of the commodity prices that we import. And that would basically be a very unpopular thing for the government. That's why they're putting a lot of subsidies, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, Bank of Japan is a lot of interfering with the verbal intervention as we speak to basically warn the market. But unless we see what we call the consolidated move by central banks, including the U.S. and Europe, I don't think they can fight against the, you know, market forces, which is continuously leaning to weakening of the yen.
So what are the risks if they don't intervene?
If they don't intervene, then that would give the signal to the market that, you know, the weakening yen can go on. Unless they try to get a joint intervention from like Fed or the ECB, I don't think we will be able to halt this move, particularly considering the fact that Bank of Japan do not have the deep pocket that many people think. And considering, again, our economic conditions, our debt positions, it's very difficult for Bank of Japan to make maneuverable moves like that of the Fed or the ECB.
That was Seijiro Takeshita, professor at the School of Management at the University of Shizuoka. Now, in the Mediterranean basin, olive trees grow naturally and produce the largest volumes of oil. Spain leads the pack as the world's top producer, churning out more than 60% of olive oil globally. So it's no wonder the first Olive Oil World Congress kicks off today in Spain's capital, Madrid. It comes at a time when the industry is grappling with one of the most challenging moments in its history because of changing weather patterns. In fact, in the past year, olive oil prices have soared by a massive 44%. Jaime Lillo is the International Olive Council's Executive Director. Jaime, thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you. First of all, take us there. What's an Olive Oil World Conference like?
Yeah, it was very good. We had participants from more than 30 countries, and we have representatives of scientific community to discuss about main challenges, as you mentioned. In front of that is facing climate change conditions and discussing how can we adapt the cultivation.
Yes, but also how price pressures is a reoccurring theme.
Yes, absolutely. Prices has been growing to levels never seen before due to two low harvests in a row in a moment that demand was growing, particularly after the pandemic. We have seen more and more people interested in having a healthy and sustainable diet and discovering olive oils all around the world. That happened that we have two short harvests in a row, something that we haven't seen ever before since we have statistics.
We've heard now about Spain. It's temporarily abolishing the sales tax on olive oil. How significant is that? Because essentially, say, Spain is subsidizing olive oil now.
Well, yeah, I think the oil market, the olive oil market in Spain is quite particular because it has maybe the highest consumption per capita. It's a daily use product. It's a kind of product that every family has in their daily shopping and use. So I think that is very specific in the Spanish market. But overall, we see that the consumption is growing and expecting to, it's developing better in other countries out of the Mediterranean basin where there is still a lot of potential to grow as consumption per capita is still quite low compared to the Spanish circumstances.
Now, Deolio, that's the world's largest olive oil producer. It says the industry needs to undergo a profound transformation. What would those changes be? Would that be new technology, new growing methods?
Absolutely. I mean, as I said before, despite the investment and new plantations and techniques, we see a change in the tendency of production. It's not growing anymore, and this is affecting prices. And we are also observing big productions, and so a lot of volatility between different years and changes affecting prices. So this escalation of prices can be followed by a quick drop and then another escalation, and this is not good. Neither for the consumers, neither for the whole sector. So we are all studying ways of stabilizing and going to more stable production pattern and price stability for consumers and producers and for the whole chain. And this is around the main discussions we have been this morning in the Congress.
Okay. Jaime Lillo, International Olive Oil Council's Executive Director, thank you so much for joining us. That was he was at the Olive Oil World Congress in Madrid. And that's all we have time for on World Business Report on the BBC World Service. Lexi O'Connor is our producer. James Wickham is our editor. And I'm Leanna Byrne. And if you want to listen back to this programme, just search for World Business Report wherever you get your BBC podcasts. Thanks so much for listening.
Sommer, Sonne, sowas von besonders. Jetzt die coolen Mercedes-Benz Sommerhits entdecken. Über 4000 attraktive Vorführ- und Geschäftswagen aus unserem Bestand. Von A-Klasse bis V-Klasse, von Cabriolet bis SUV. Alle kurzfristig verfügbar, alle zu Top-Konditionen, alle für Sie bereit. Sommer, Sonne, Sommerhits. Nur bei Ihrer Mercedes-Benz-Niederlassung vor Ort.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten, für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI4People.
Sommer, Sonne, sowas von besonders. Jetzt die coolen Mercedes-Benz Sommerhits entdecken. Über 4000 attraktive Vorführ- und Geschäftswagen aus unserem Bestand. Von A-Klasse bis V-Klasse, von Cabriolet bis SUV. Alle kurzfristig verfügbar, alle zu Top-Konditionen, alle für Sie bereit. Sommer, Sonne, Sommerhits. Nur bei Ihrer Mercedes-Benz-Niederlassung vor Ort.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten, für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI for People.